Works.
What's up?
Go.
Oh, we're starting? Okay. What's up, everybody? This is Joffer Papa Pump Penisai, a.k.a. give you a golden shower.
What the fuck?
I gotta start over. Oh, man. I didn't come up with one. All right, I'm ready.
Go.
What's up, everybody? This is Joffer Papa Pump Penisai, a.k.a. coming like Jesus. What's my main man, John DeMatmaz? How you doing, buddy?
I never have anything good to say after you come up with this slick intro.
And literally, I just come up with those on the fly. How you been, man?
Yo, man, I'm doing pretty good. I kind of missed your body.
Bro, dick. I miss your smell. I miss your musk.
Dude, what have you been up to?
Bro, I opened up my own studio in April 2015, BGMT, Fitness and Personal Training in Main Street, Mattawan, and since then, we've been booming personal training clients up the wazoo, classes.
I mean, what is a wazoo?
Wazoo is literally
is it like kazoo?
It's the place between your scrotum and your butthole.
Okay. Is that a scientific term?
Bro, it's, Webster's Dictionary defines... No, it's, dude, I'm so blessed, man. I get to do what I love every single day, and I can't believe how amazing the studio's come together. And as much of a goofball I am, I'm so lucky to be able to help so many people. That's my passion in life. And now, getting this podcast going, everything's kind of feng shuiing. I don't know what that means.
It's coming full circle, literally.
Full circle. What about you, brother? What you been up to?
Dude, I've been on a crazy run. I've been drinking a lot.
I noticed.
Spent like 4 or 5 days in October in Munich in Germany for Oktoberfest. That was great.
How drunk?
Like on 1 to 10.
On a scale of 1 to 10.
Dude, I don't know. I drank at least 30 beers the first day I was there. I definitely.
How were the women?
Oh man, Germany. There's definitely some beautiful women there. If you're into dudes, there's probably a couple of those too.
I'm going.
You know, those just strapping. Bavarian guys in their lederhosen with some short shorts and some Argyle socks. Yes. I mean, if that's your speed, there's plenty of it there for sure.
Beautiful.
Man, that part of Germany is beautiful. Southern part, Bavaria. Awesome. Tons of culture, tons of history with the Oktoberfest. That was once-a-lifetime experience. I didn't know how big that festival was. Apparently 6 million people visit there.
Damn.
And it's massive. It goes for like 2-3 weeks. It has carnival rides. It's like... Seaside Heights, less white trash, and way more fun.
You know, I actually tried my first sip of alcohol about like 2 months ago.
Welcome to the club.
It was terrible.
Oh, what'd you drink? Wine?
No. Let's just say we're at a party, a lot of people, and the first one I had was just like...
Jello shot.
It was some kind of beer.
Smirnoff Ice.
What the hell it was. Miller Lite. Horrible. I think it was hops. I don't know what the hell hops is. I don't know anything about alcohol. Then somebody else goes, oh, why don't you take my, some kind of like straight alcohol mixed with Sprite. That was terrible.
Well, soda's just disgusting in general, but.
Yeah.
I mean, some people don't like beer. There's so many different kinds of beer, you know.
There was one that I liked. It tastes like kombucha. I don't know what that was.
Okay. I mean, like beers, like you equate them to cars. Like you could go get like a really shitty cheap car. You get a really shitty cheap beer. Or
just
get, like
a hooker.
That too, you get a really nice, quality, expensive car, and rides real nice. Same thing with the beer. Like, all that beer I drank in Germany, I hardly had a hangover like the next day.
I did.
Yeah, well, barely know her.
So, let's talk about some things, brother. So, right now, Nick Diaz suspended for 4 years.
5 years.
5 years. 5 years for indecent exposure in public. Wait, what
in
was
a playground
again?
In a drug-free school zone.
Something like that. No, what exactly was the story behind that?
So, the Nevada State Athletic Commission tested Nick Diaz a couple times. Two tests by WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, which is the same for Olympic athletes and other professional sporting events. And then they tested him a third time with like your Quest Diagnostics, which is like your standard school or job place testing, you know, your like standard urine sample. And the two WADA tests were showing him with a really low, almost untraceable amount of THC in his system. And then this urine test, I'm not sure the time frame on it, but it was, you know, during the testing period, showing him with like 700 times more in his system than the other two World Anti-Doping Agencies. So pretty much Nevada State Athletic Commission just dropped the fucking hammer on him, fined him like $150,000 and banned him for 5 years, or suspended him for 5 years, which pretty much where he's at in his career, his age, that's a death sentence for his career.
The weird thing about that is a lot of people are saying free Nick Diaz, free Nick Diaz. And it's kind of a tough situation that they're put in because he's done this more than once. I think looking at it, I don't think somebody should have such a tough punishment for marijuana. But, I mean, he's done this, what, five times now, six times, well, however many times?
Here's the issue is there's no consistency within the Nevada State Athletic Commission, right? So, first of all, if they're going to say that marijuana is a performance-enhancing drug, which is what they are saying.
Which I don't believe it is.
Which I disagree. But irregardless, first of all, there needs to be some scientific studies done to say it's a performance-enhancing drug or not a performance-enhancing drug. They've done scientific research on certain anabolic steroids, and they can say, you know, as a matter of fact, this is or this isn't accepted. You know what I mean? The second part is there's been so many other situations in professional fighting that – for example, John Jones tested positive for cocaine, a banned substance, no punishment.
Which is funny enough because cocaine actually has been used by some fighters pre-fight, so their face actually gets numb. That's actually 100% the truth. I've heard it from several Dutch professional kickboxers I know.
I don't doubt it.
And they use it so this way they kind of rage out. They're super focused. I've never done it, so I don't know
it's obviously a stimulant, you know?
Yeah, so, I mean, if those people admitted they use it for performance issues, John Jones got caught with it, basically nothing, just, quote, rehab, but...
A one-day rehab. Now, I don't really care what people do. If people are going to, in my opinion, indulge in recreational drugs, to me, like marijuana, heroin, mushrooms, acid, all those kind of psychedelics... They don't have a performance-enhancing element to them if it's out of competition testing. So if you want to indulge in anything you want out of competition, that's fine. But if you're going to be testing in competition testing, there has to be more of a standard across the board for all substances. So if you're going to include marijuana as a performance-enhancing drug
then everything
in competition testing, mm-hmm. then it should be the same across the board for all other recreational drugs.
The stupidity of it is caffeine is more of a performance-enhancing, you know.
Dude, go take like six fucking Rip Fuels and then
you'll be ready to
blast off to Jupiter.
So, and you know what it is too? It's not like he was smoking weed before the fight and then went into the fight and was super loose and just... You know, on the money. No, he probably smoked some pot because training camp is really hard and they need some kind of enjoyment while they're training. And truthfully, you know, I've smoked pot here and there. And I'll tell you what, if you are achy and tired, I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger, what's that movie he made?
Pumping Iron. Just smoking a joint, eating birthday cake.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's a nice way to indulge. And I'm sorry if people think it's the worst thing in the world, but really it's not. If you drink, drinking's 100 times worse.
Drinking is 1,000 times worse. And to me, you know, there's been a lot of conversation of where does performance enhancing elements begin and end, right? So if I have money and I can afford, say, better supplements than you, like protein or recovery supplements, vitamins, maybe I can afford a hyperbaric chamber and you can't. Is that a performance-enhancing supplement? Is that a performance-enhancing edge that I have that you don't? So, you know, I can afford to eat organic food, just say, maybe you can't. Or maybe I could eat a certain, you know, food lifestyle and you can't afford it. At what point does performance-enhancing begin and where does it end? And where is kind of like that gray area? Now, marijuana, does that fall in that gray area? Like, that's kind of where the conversation should be.
You know, the only thing they should say is that it's an illegal drug. And the fact that he's been – the only argument I would support if they went with this argument was that he's been busted so many times for it and it's an illegal drug if they want to go that way. But again, going back to what we were saying about John Jones, he should have been hit with a much bigger penalty if that's the case.
Yeah, I mean they dropped the hammer on Chael Sonnen too, but he popped for like 100 different things.
Well, you know what it was with him? He got busted. I believe one of them was Clomid. Clomid's actually something that doctors give on the regular to people with low testosterone. It's not like testosterone. It actually has your body go and produce it naturally again.
He was on a bunch of other stuff like estrogen blockers, yeah, and all. Which is, like he was on a cocktail of a myriad of things.
I mean, I'm familiar with a lot of things he was on, and truthfully, if he was founded on those and not actual testosterone and not actual, say, something like Winstrol, it's such a gray area. It's such a tough thing. But let's change for a second. Johnny Hendricks, huh? Not making weight, kidney stones.
Is he not working with Dolce anymore? The Dolce diuretic diet? Like, what's going on over here?
The weird thing about that dude is he's saying he got kidney stones from deer meat.
He's also saying that he came in to camp 10 pounds heavier than he normally comes into. is this the end of his career? Because if he can't make 170, do you think he's going to fight? Can he fight at 185 and be dominating, or is he just too big?
The weird thing, too, is he attested his last loss to Robbie Lawler because of conditioning, and he said the weight cut was too drastic. And then I remember he was talking about going back with Dolce or this and that. Funny thing is, a lot of people who say they go with Dolce, it's just nice because he controls everything, but there's no magic.
He's programming for you, but he's doing nothing that any other nutritionist that's intelligent. Like, it's not a secret.
Yeah, I mean,
it's nutritional science, but yeah. It's not like it's something that he has that nobody else has access to.
I mean, Johnny Hendricks maybe a whole makes lot a good of vitamin point. C. He says he knows his body, but the problem is the guy just gets so fat when he's not training.
Do you think it's because, you know, the guy wrestled on such an elite level that he's been cutting weight for so long, for so many years, that his body is just deteriorating?
He thinks he knows he can cut weight the same way, which, I mean, look at my fight career. At the end, making the same 135 almost became impossible.
Dude, we had you in, like, infrared saunas for, like, hours, and you would lose,
yeah, and you then, know, you know, you do the whole minimal amount of weight and this and that. You know, the older you get, the harder it gets. And
plus, the trauma causes to your body, too.
Absolutely. So I do think he still can make that weight class, but he has to give up McDonald's. He has to give up Burger King because they say he eats like shit when he's not in fight camp. So that he's got to get disciplined.
I like a whole pizza right now.
But you're not in fight camp right now.
I'm in fat camp right now.
Fat camp.
Yo, oh, if it's winter, I'm bulking up.
Bro,
it's
bulking season. Bulk up and choke up.
You know it, bro.
You know it. So I don't know if you caught the last Bellator fight they had. They did a mixed kickboxing MMA show. Did you get to see that?
I saw some highlights. I didn't see the actual live event, but was our buddy Eric Haycraft there by the chance?
Yes, he was there. Personally, I thought it was a cool idea.
How did it look on TV? Like, was it kind of cool or was it not cool? Like,
you know, I wasn't into it. I wasn't into it because you had a cage and a ring. And then
if they just fucking fought in a ring? Like, what if the MMA fights
were in the ring?
Like, that would have been fucking pretty sick.
That's the way they should have done it. Because I looked at a spectator's perspective. If you were first row in the ring, that means you were last row for the cage.
I didn't see how it was set up.
It was basically they were side by side. And if, let's say you were the first row for the ring sports, you did not see anything for the MMA because it was to the side of it. So you basically had to watch the big screen. So you paid first rate for seats, and you were basically at the worst seat for the cage.
You know, I've been a couple UFCs, and I've been to a bunch of, you know, smaller professional shows and a bunch of amateur shows, kickboxing and mixed martial arts, even, like, jiu-jitsu tournaments. Honestly, I like the energy of being in the stadium or the crowd, but you definitely get better views on TV. You get the replays, you get the commentating, you get kind of, like, a more close-up angle.
You know, I'm just
I wonder if some of these professional sports are going to go towards, like, that Metamoris model where they're producing these events with almost no crowd, and that way the overhead's way cheaper. It's a couple guys fighting, and then that way you don't have to worry about having a stadium with 15,000 people under 20,000 people.
You
know what
makes me laugh is you got to look at, and people make fun of this, they make jokes, but you got to look at the model that the WWE does, the World Wrestling Entertainment.
Dude, they put shows on, what, 3 or 4 nights a week, and they fucking pack a house every night.
Here's the thing.
All over the country.
They've created stars. They've created people you want to see. Even if the guy is, say, somebody who loses every night, they created people that you want to cheer behind. They created stars. They created notable names.
They created a story and a storyline, too.
And here's the thing. So let's say you can't really make the same kind of, quote, storyline issue for MMA. That guy, Vince McMahon, is a genius when it comes to selling. All you got to do $9.99 a month, you get the WWE Network, and you get to watch every pay-per-view for free.
I don't know anything about WWE. Yeah. I don't follow it anymore.
They're doing the same business model as these
like HBO.
Club Metro. No, if you look at these gyms lately, Club Metro.
Look at HBO To Go, like, that's $9.99 a month, and you get all the content.
And now think about it. Instead of getting 800,000 people spending $60, now you maybe got, let's say, 10 million people. You know, their subscription is in the high millions. So they really went for bulk. And I think with combat sports, people are sick of spending $60 every single month on a pay-per-view.
Every single month, man. There's, like, back-to-back UFCs, like, you know, and then you throw in World Series of Fighting or Bellator, you throw in Glory. Like, dude, I mean, you could shell out hundreds of dollars a month in just combat sports.
I mean,
if you actually pay for them.
If you think about it, UFC wants to try to have a show at MSG in
like April or May.
Something like that. Well, every time wrestling's at MSG, it's sold out. Why? It's the production value. It's literally the audience can be a part of it. And I think if you look at Glory, you look at the UFC, you look at Bellator, there is literally a new champion every time. There is somebody who's coming up the ranks, and that's great. That's fighting. But you still got to create stars that even when they lose, you're still behind. I was always behind Randy Couture. That guy could have lost 5 times.
Oh, I watch him fight right now. I'll pay. I don't care if he fights fucking Andre the Giant.
Because they developed him as a star. They got him the fights that made his career, and they got him the fights even when he lost. He was a hero. When he lost to Brock Lesnar, we were like, bro, he's a hero. I don't care. When he beat Tim Sylvia,
he was a legend.
Yeah.
I mean, even like Chuck Liddell. Chuck Liddell got his fucking face knocked off his last 3 fights. I tune in and watch every one of those fights.
And that's the thing. They've never reproduced another superstar like that. I mean, when Anderson Silva...
They're kind of honey-dicking you at Ronda Rousey because she's fighting a bunch of fucking chumps. But
exactly. And, you know, I
love... Well, not chumps, but the talent pool for women isn't...
Let's just say this. I love Ronda Rousey. I think she's incredible. She's sexy.
She's a total package for a female combative athlete.
But it's literally like putting, let's say, Johnny Hendricks in a female division at the same weight. He'll crush everybody, you know, and it's just, unfortunately, female fighting, she's a big fish in a small pond. I mean, it's just unfortunate there's nobody that's really going to be able to match her, and even Cyborg, I could give a rat's ass about that fight now.
Cyborg's not even relevant. She hasn't really fought anybody of any big notoriety in a few years. Like, what other woman has she fought that you're actually interested in?
Exactly. And, you know, you could say, oh, Cyborg finished this woman, Cyborg finished that woman. But when Ronda Rousey finishes somebody, everybody watches. It's incredible.
And now everybody's kind of questioning Cyborg's ethics and her validity, because we all know she was finishing people and she was fucking juiced to the tits, no pun intended.
Yeah. Well, no, juiced till her tits were gone.
Yeah, well, whatever you want to say. But yeah, for sure. I mean, it kind of puts that weird asterisk next to the athlete's name, whether it's male, female, even in any sport where you're like, oh, yeah, Barry Bonds had 70-something home runs, but we all know he was fucking TRT fucking forever.
Yeah. Problem with women fighting, unfortunately, is that even if you get more people doing it, I hate to sound sexist, I love women, I think they're amazing, but when you have such a high caliber person, say, as a Ronda Rousey or that 115 fighter, Johanna...
Oh, the Muay Thai girl? Yeah,
it's just they're going to be standing above the rest. They have physical abilities that put them up to par with guys, and truthfully, that's a huge advantage. They have the athletic ability of their male counterparts, whereas most of them, they're people who are proficient at an art, but they just don't have that athletic capability as somebody, say, a Ronda Rousey.
And then you also have that other kind of novelty of them just being, like, super beautiful.
Exactly. So they're going to be completely marketable. They're going to be stars. And besides Ronda Rousey, she, in my opinion, is holding the UFC together, because if you ask me what I thought about Robbie Lawler, I would say who?
Robbie Lawler is a fucking phenomenal fighter, but his personality is, you know, he's a duh.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
he's a fucking probably like the nicest dude in the world, but he's a duh.
Who's the light heavyweight champ right now?
I don't know who's at 205. Daniel Cormier?
Yeah. Wait, no, he's the heavyweight champ. No, wait, no.
He's light heavyweight.
No, he's light heavyweight. Yeah, he's light heavyweight.
Yeah, I mean, he just fought Gustafsson.
And I heard that was an amazing fight.
I didn't even tune in to watch. I didn't even tune in.
So I think the issue is there's too many fights. Not enough big names. I mean, it's so hard to follow because...
Well, now that John Jones is out of the slammer or rehab or whatever he's at, he's on the internet lifting fucking 500-something pound deadlifts, and now there's, like, this whole backstory with John Jones coming out of, like, you know, this dark area and coming back, and he's gonna, you know, fight Cormier one more time, or, you know, or maybe Bader. Who knows?
You know, I gotta be honest. People like John Jones, GSP... even Anderson, I don't want to see them come back. GSP, I desperately don't want to see him come back.
Well, John Jones is still so young. He actually, there's nothing wrong with him physically. He just got in some legal trouble, and he has stepped away from the sport. I think John Jones probably has a solid more 5 years ahead of him. He might go down if he can stay healthy and he can put that work in. Because, you know, all the rumors were he had 3 week training camps and beat the brakes off everybody. If you could put in a real training camp and really grind and stay healthy and not get hurt, because that's the biggest thing in the sport is not getting hurt, who's stopping him?
I think the biggest issue is, can he not go back to recreational drugs?
I mean, I love like that Mike Tyson story. I would love a John Jones story where he just puts all his money up his nose and just fucking buys Tigers and Lamborghinis and shit. That's an American dream right there. But I also would love to see that guy maybe be one of the best athletes in the history of the world if he could go 5 more years in his prime undefeated. He might be able to outshine Couture, Liddell, Fedor. You know, you name anybody. If he goes a few more years undefeated, God damn, man.
I got to tell you, point blank, GSP should not fight again. Point blank, Anderson Silva should never fight again. GSP...
Are they talking GSP to come out of retirement? Or?
You know, they're always wanting him to come back. And then Anderson
Silva... Can GSP pass a drug test?
I mean, he always did. he always did pass it, even though, I mean, his nipples are sharper than a freaking woman in, you know, the Ice Age. You know? I don't even know how that came together in my mind, but it did.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, that guy had gynecomastia. It's ridiculous. Dude, he had breasts.
That guy's body was just a little too perfect, right?
Well, yeah. Well, it's just literally, if there's one thing you learn about steroid formation, you will get, quote, bitch tits. You will have a little bit of that protruding nipple. You know, it will change.
You think that's genetics, or do you think that's...
No, that it is genetic in the sense that some people who take steroids are more estrogen.
More pronounced, maybe?
Yeah, they produce... Because your testosterone just doesn't go up by itself. Your estrogen will also rise with it. Some men get estrogen rises more dominantly than others. That's why they use those estrogen blockers that, like we were saying before, Chael Sonnen got caught.
Clomid and all the other stuff?
No, Clomid, not Clomid. He was using Arimidase.
Okay.
Arimidex.
Barely know her.
Barely even know her. So GSP should call it quits. He's got a legacy. He's got a shit ton of wins. Stop.
Now what about Anderson Silva? Do you think he'll ever come back from that leg injury, or is that? Is
I
that
mean, no. He came back. He fought Nick Diaz.
Yeah, but he didn't look that dominant, and Nick Diaz was high as fuck. Apparently, here's the thing.
He should not fight again, because if you can't finish Nick Diaz and you're Anderson Silva. Dude, he was on antidepressants and this and
he
that.
Also tested positive for steroids too.
Yeah, exactly. So... he needs to stop. I mean.
What's his ban, by the way?
Yeah, it's like a year.
Yeah, and guess what? It goes from the year of the infraction, so it's a year from that fight, so it's already been a few months, so he's not even really losing that much time.
So I think he needs to stop, too. I think the biggest issue with a lot of fighters, they don't respect what's called the expiration date. For some reason, you wake up someday, and you're not as sharp, you're not as strong, you're not as fast, you're not into it anymore. And a lot of people try to force it.
How about for yourself, when you stepped away from fighting, you have people around you to tell you, like, you shouldn't do this anymore, or giving you their professional opinion.
Unfortunately,
like, you think these guys just have a bunch of yes men, and then don't forget, there's millions of dollars involved too. So, you know, if you're a coach and you stand to make $100,000 off of this guy's fight,
you don't want them to stop.
Maybe their best interest isn't in, you know, their best interest and your best interest are kind of conflicting.
You know what it is? Here's the thing. So I did have people that still wanted me to continue. They're, you know, and they were students, fans, things like that. But you also got to look at it as I realized at one point during my last training camp, when I would pay sparring partners to train with me, and I'd pay pad holders, and I'd pay everything. And it got to a point that my expenses outweighed everything. It was to the point that it wasn't fun anymore. Now, these guys have a little more leeway with sponsors and this and that, but it got to a point. If you don't have the means to consistently do that, and you don't have the will to want to cut weight, and it's just time to call it quits. When you wake up and you're literally like, I love this, but I don't love it as a job anymore, it's time to walk away.
Especially on like an amateur level when you're not making any money.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like you could travel here, fly there, train there, do this, do that. You're never going to recoup any of those dollars if that's what you're looking to do. I mean, you can never put a price tag on those experiences or those people you meet or the training you get, for sure. But
the biggest thing is, when you have a long amateur career, that is paving your way to be a coach. I don't think anybody should be a coach if they haven't had an excess of fights, as many as they can get, because it defines your ability to break down technique, what worked, what didn't work. It defines your ability to help pass on what you learned more efficiently. So I can tell you how a jab works and why I need to step in it, because let's say I fought somebody who was outside of range, so I had to do a step on my jab, so it helped me actually close the distance. Whereas other people who don't have that ring experience may tell you to do a stationary jab because they haven't been in there.
Kick shields, all that stuff.
Yeah, so you need somebody who's actually applied it. Now, I'm not saying they have to be a world champ to make you a world champ. They have to have what I call articulation of technique.
Yeah, there's some great coaches out there. There's some great coaches out there that have had terrible careers. Or subpar careers, and they're great coaches.
Yeah, because they spent their time mastering their craft, which means actually trying it in the ring. I mean, just because you train your ass up doesn't mean you're going to win. But all the training leading up to that, you realized, hey, that helped my cardio, that didn't help my cardio. That made my jab better, that didn't make my jab better. I need to work on checking, so you spend your next fight camp getting better at checking.
Now, how about this? You're supposed to put your trust in these coaches, people that program for you. How do you know that the people you're entrusting are up to par? Like,
let me say this. 90% of – I can't speak for jiu-jitsu guys. 90% of the kickboxing gyms out there are bullshit.
What are they, and, like, just cardio kickboxing or just –
not even that. They're guys who either were taekwondo guys or did low-level fights who decided to call themselves crew and take on their responsibility. I'll fuck your crew up. Yeah, exactly. I'll fuck your crew up. You know, and decided to be teachers because they couldn't make it as fighters. And not only they couldn't make it as fighters, they just didn't really want to fight. They're guys that want to buy a certification over the weekend and now be crew, ajarn, master, jackoff.
Now, how many of those guys have you run into lately? Are they becoming more frequent now since the popularity of mixed martial arts and glory and all that's kind of resurfacing again in this, you know, in the late 2000s here?
You want to be a coach. Here's the deal. You got to put in the time, okay? And what I mean by time is you got to be a fighter or around elite-level fighters, okay? You got to learn a proper curriculum. You got to learn how to pass that curriculum on. You have to be – you got to work your way up. So you start as, say, maybe, you know, a water boy, and then you start off as a second in the corner. And then you take your own little staple of guys, and you have still somebody overseeing you. And then from there, your guys start doing better. You take on an intermediate-level group of guys, and you start helping them. And the process continues and continues till you can make
it. And then you attract other people into your crew. And
exactly. The issue is people don't want to put the actual work. I mean, right now I'm interning with Eric Haycraft. You know, even before him, I had a long kickboxing career, I had a long Kyokushin karate career. But if I'm going to be an elite level coach, I want to attach myself to an elite level coach to learn and get better and better. So that way, 5, 6 years, maybe even 10 years down the road, when he says you can be an affiliate of me, I came up the right way. I came up under somebody I respect, somebody who's notable. Doing it the right way is what defines you.
I think that's a lost art too. As I was talking to one of my friends earlier today over at lunch, and she's an artist, and I forget how many years she spent, but she spent years and years and years apprenticing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think an apprenticeship is like a lost art form in our society in general today. You know, like especially martial arts. Like we've been training with the same jiu-jitsu coach for like 10 years, yep. Right?
And we know his style better than anybody.
I got to train with him last weekend for the first time in a long time, and I'm like, I miss this. I need somebody to be that I respect to keep apprenticing under to learn things like just intricacies that I would never know. You know, like you have to have that person that's above you to continually put you in check. Like
no matter who you are, you don't know everything.
No, not at all. And sometimes when you think you do, you know, that's the wrong place to be.
That's your downfall.
That's the exact wrong place to be. That's where you fuck up. That's how you get hurt.
Well, that's like these people putting fighters into a fight. There was a Friday Night Fight show two events ago. Their last one was excellent. There was two events ago. They had like 13 to 15 fights, which was way too many fights.
That's a long card.
But each fight, I got to tell you, 80% of the fights were garbage.
Really?
And I'm talking about, they had an East Coast female title fight, and the chick did more spinning back fists than a freaking whirling dervish circles.
Whirling dervish.
I mean, it was so ridiculous to the point that just went into this business because, oh, martial arts is cool.
Oh, it's a big – Friday Night Fights is a huge promotion. We can get our bullshit gym name on the banner or
– exactly.
You know,
we
whatever.
We can use it as a marketing tool. We can feel a part of this like we're legit. And realistically, I mean, God, that girl won the title. If I was her coach, I would have taken the title and shoved it up somebody's ass because it was an embarrassment. An embarrassment. I mean,
and not only that, you're fighting – were they fighting full rules Muay Thai?
No, they were fighting, I believe –
glory rules?
No, it was Muay Thai, but no elbows. So it modified rules.
Big deal. No, but dude, yeah. You could get your fucking brain bashed in, or you can get your teeth knocked out.
There's no responsibility. The coaches play no responsibility.
Like, you want some young 25-year-old chick or however old she was.
Hell yeah, yeah, I do.
But, like, as a coach, man, I would feel terrible if I put somebody in the ring and that girl gets her fucking front teeth knocked out, and then now she's walking around the rest of her life with the, you know.
Well, the funny thing is, I mean, even if you look at my fight team, I have a group of killers. But I wait until they are primed and ready to let him go because at the end of the day –
How long did Gary train with you before you let him have his first fight?
Oh, my God, like 2 years. 2 years. And before that, he had 3 years of experience. I would not let him in the ring for 2 years until I was confident.
And he has a martial arts background too. Yeah, right?
I would not put him in the ring till I was confident that he'd be safe, because at the end of the day, I can't be in there with him.
Of course not. And then how bad would you feel if, God forbid, something happened to that kid?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's the disattachment. Some coaches don't feel, look, you can't control what's going to happen in the ring, but what you can control is, did your fighter go in shape? Did they go in conditioned? And I don't mean
just... Did they go with confidence?
I don't just mean cardio. I mean, can they take a hit? Is their legs conditioned? Is their abs conditioned? Can you control, have they learned a game plan? Yeah, you can control those aspects. Now, you can't control nerves. You can't control, just some days just aren't your days. There are those X factors you can't control, but the things you can control, you have a responsibility to put that forth and really make sure it's as safe as possible.
Yeah, you should mitigate all the risks that you possibly can mitigate. Like, why would you – like, dude, how many fights have you seen when people just show up and they're just straight – they're just out of shape?
It's terrible.
You can control that.
Absolutely.
And so, if you can't control that, you know, go play video games.
Yeah, and honestly, as a coach, you should get out of this business. Just say you're a white-collar – cardio kickboxing trainer and get the
ain't
fuck
mad at
out.
That. Ain't mad at know? That.
Get the fuck out of the fight game. And I got to tell you, I'm disappointed with 90% of the gyms out there, because they're putting people out there, and once they go to a higher level and say fight on the West Coast, they get murdered.
So we don't want to name any of the shitty gyms. Like, what are some of the gyms that you do like, that you do appreciate, that they are doing the right job?
All
right,
so let's, you know.
You don't have to name all of them, but just a few that come
just
to
Just a few that come to my mind.
Obviously, no, Haycraft.
I gotta say Haycraft. I mean, that guy is point blank like my hero. That guy, like,
you but know, not everybody could go down.
Yeah,
to Louisville,
not everybody
so.
Can go to Louisville.
How about people in like New York or Philly or something like that, or in the local area? To
I will say, I think Rami Ibrahim in Philly does a good job prepping his guys. He's very hands on. That's what I like about
he's
him.
He's working with what's his name? That fights in the UFC. Another dude from Philly. Oh, I can't think of his name.
Wilson Gobert?
No.
No. Jared Weiner?
No.
Mark McMarkson?
No, I don't know. I can't think of it.
But
anyway, I heard
I like
of
how
podcasts.
Involved he is with his fighters. You know, I don't really like that traditional Thai style for myself. They're a little more traditional, but his guys win. And
he gives a shit, because you see him at all these events. He cares.
Yeah, like, for me, the biggest issue, too, is I don't really like that traditional Thai styles, but he does a great job implementing game plans, getting his guys ready. So he is the first guy that comes to mind. But, I mean, I got to tell you, other than that, no gym in New Jersey. I'm just sorry. No gym in New Jersey. New York. Jeez. Damn. I don't like any gym in New York either. And I'm sorry, guys. Sorry. Just, I don't like the preparation. I will say, my boy Brandon from Evolution does a good job prepping his guys. So I got to give a shout out to him. But besides that, I just don't like the way they prep for fights, because they don't really respect the danger that's involved in this. I mean, there's a lot of danger. And if you don't respect that and understand that, if you care more about putting people in the ring, dude, you got to reconsider.
Yeah, I mean, because now that we're learning about all this other scientific information with traumatic brain injuries, dude, pugilistic sports, you're 25 years old, what are you going to do? Be brain damage the rest of your life after one fight, which is a possibility.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Especially when you're wearing, you know, 14, 16-ounce gloves.
I got to give a shout-out. Sorry. My boy Joel Estevez and Omar Estevez, they do a kick-ass job helping fighters train. They're at a Seton gym. So I got to put that out there, because those are my boys, and I don't want to lose my friends.
After this, you might not have many left.
Bro, I hope I can go out sometime and get a drink with them.
So what do you got planned for the next winter's coming around, you got the gym going now, the gym's almost in full swing.
Yeah, I mean,
what do you kind of have on like your 6 month, 1 year, 5 year plan here?
You know, right now I don't want to think that too far ahead, but right now the goal is run this gym, get it going, eventually hire an instructor that's been under me, give him some clients, develop his own clientele, then do the same model with another trainer. Then from there, maybe look to franchise. But I'm really looking to get the kickboxing program developed. I mean, we've got some great up-and-coming guys coming, so I'll add more classes, add a beginner program, maybe down the road add a kids program. So there's a lot of possibilities. But
how are you growing your kickboxing classes? Is it word of mouth? Are you using advertising?
Honestly, there's so much emphasis on advertising, but man, word of mouth is the shit. Word of mouth, really, because I've got
word
a great mouth job. But no, I mean, I've got some great clients. They're loyal, they're helpful, they promote me, and that has been the key. When you're good to people, they'll be good to you. So you want to grow, be good to the people around you.
I support that.
So let's just kind of run short, because I know you got an early morning, and I got an early morning tomorrow. So I'm going to ask you some random questions.
Go.
I don't know if I answer. Before we go, let's actually mention, hi, Julie. I just want to say hello, and I miss you, Julie Kitchen. And I can't wait to have you on, because I'm going to kiss you on your mouth over the internet. Sorry.
I just got super weirded out, but...
So, all right. John Matz, you've been to Hawaii, you've been to Germany, you've been to Japan.
Your mom's house.
My mom's house. Out of all these places, what is your favorite place, and what's the best thing you've ever done, even including sexual favors?
Man, that's a long laundry list. You know, lately, right now, Hawaii's been on top of my list. I bought a condo out there a few months ago.
I thought you said you don't like condoms.
Condo.
Oh, shit.
Barely know. Those are for sellers. Yeah, so I was fortunate enough to come across a good piece of real estate out there. I purchased a condo back in May. I've gotten to go out there, like, I don't know, once a month since it happened. So it's kind of cool. I've been getting to do some training out there. My longtime friend and training partner, Jason Bitzer, getting to do some kickboxing and jiu-jitsu with him. I've been training at the North Shore Jiu-Jitsu Club with Mike Fowler a few times, which is pretty rad. There's a bunch of really cool guys up there. And Hawaii's become just like kind of the East Coast, a mecca for martial artists, because you have beautiful weather, beautiful women, tons of Brazilians. So everybody up there is trying to train jiu-jitsu. Everybody surfs. So everybody's kind of passing through. It's very... it's a little nomadic. You kind of get people from all over the world coming in. So that's actually really cool. As far as coolest shit I've done lately, man, I got invited to a wedding in Tokyo a few weeks back, and I got super fucking shit hammered.
Fuck yeah.
I got super shit hammered. Had an awesome wedding, and then I got invited to go to this karaoke place. So I had taken some of my friends like shopping this other part of Tokyo. And then I was supposed to meet up with, like, the groom and the bride, two of my coworkers, and then, like, a whole bunch of other people.
So it was a good time?
So I'll get – I'm telling you a good story here. Don't interrupt me.
Sorry.
So
I know my role.
This dude gives me the address for the karaoke bar. So I punch up my phone, and I make my way over there. And I was like, fuck, man, I can't find the place. Like, where the fuck is it? He's like, I'll come outside and get you. So he comes outside and gets me. And then he goes to the door. And the door is, like – it's kind of like a glass front building. And the door is all kind of like frosted glass. He like punches this code in. The glass goes clear. Walk inside. There's like a guy opens up the door for you. You're in this kind of like, looks like an old school bar.
Oh, shit.
With like bookshelves. Kind of like this 1930s kind of like Prohibition style bar.
Like 50 Shades of Grey.
I don't know, but okay. So I meet these Japanese dudes that own the bar. They're like friends of my friend's wife is Japanese, and he's a white guy from the States. So these Japanese guys know his wife. So they invite us into the bar, and he, like, goes over to this bookcase, and he touches these books, and all of a sudden, like, the bookcase, like, slides open, and then behind that, it's, like, this kind of, like, pathway, and it's just all these karaoke rooms, and there's all these fucking Japanese people in there just fucking getting busy on fucking shit. I don't even know what they're saying. God. And we just rocked out and partied, like, all night long. It was,
that's freaking awesome.
It was really cool. I have some videos. I'm going to have
to. I can't wait to see it.
I have to post them. It's fucking, it's.
BGMT YouTube page.
It's goddamn hilarious, because I'm, like, super white, you know. I don't fit in at all.
No.
And these chicks are just ultra Japanese, singing all these, like, Japanese pop songs. It's fucking awesome.
That's fucking sick, bro.
Yeah, it was pretty badass. It was a really cool experience, because it's not every day you get invited to a Japanese wedding, and then it's, like, never. I've never been invited to, like, a secret karaoke bar with, like, some bookshelves moving out of the way.
Just a sick time.
Yeah, it was insane. Like, it was such a cool experience. I mean that wasn't even on my list of things I ever do, but
it happened.
I can't wait to go back.
All right,
get crunk.
Fuck yeah. So what's my question?
Oh man, okay, how about this? What's more important, being happy or having money?
Philosophical as fuck. Now, if I'm happy, am I poor?
I mean, it's up to you, man. Like, do you equate your happiness with monetary gain, or do you, like, you know...
And then if I'm rich, am I unhappy?
I don't know, man.
See, I'm throwing philosophical... Okay, here's...
So that's the problem, is,
here's
like...
Here's what I'm going to give
you. How about, like, for example, would you rather work 1,000 hours a week, never see your friends or family, but have a fucking fat rack in your pocket?
Here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to go with happiness, and this is why. When you're fucking happy, you emit positive energy. people want to be around that positive energy. So whatever your goal is, let's say you want to start a business, not even personal training. Let's say something like you want to be a shoe salesman.
Al Bundy,
there you go. You're going to have an energy that people are going to like to be around you. You're going to be positive. You're going to be motivated. Happiness really makes everything in life easier to do. When you're a miserable fuck, everything is harder.
And it doesn't matter how much money you have.
Exactly. So when you have happiness, which is positivity, you can be successful. You can work your way up to making money. When all you have is money, all you're doing is stressing about staying rich. That's the only thing you keep thinking about. How can I keep my wealth? How can I keep my wealth? So happiness, absolutely, but happiness with the mindset of don't get lazy.
Now, I have one more question for you.
You know it.
If you didn't have to work, say you didn't have to worry about money, okay? What would you do as far as like and something to keep you busy? Like what would be like your quote-unquote job? Obviously, you don't have to worry about collecting a paycheck, but if you didn't have to collect a paycheck, you don't have to worry about money, you had enough money to bank to support your lifestyle, what would you do as far as, like, keep you happy? Like, would you volunteer? Would you coach people? Would you write a book? Like, what would you do?
Honestly, truthfully, I would probably spend the first year traveling, and not traveling just to, eat food and this and that.
Like go to Las Vegas and finger blast a hooker.
Exactly. I'd want to actually educate myself on the world, see what other people are going through, see poverty, see happiness, see laughter. I want to see everything. Then I would come back and I actually would go back to being a coach, but the only difference is I would actually be able to help people on a deeper level in the sense that everybody, if you notice, in America is depressed. Everybody has moments of sadness. Everybody falls to weakness and drugs. Not everybody, I apologize, but a good amount of people. And you'll be more worldly and better adapted to help them in their situation. So I'd want to see the rest of the world and be able to give more hands-on experience, more hands-on wisdom to help people.
You feel like something in your life that you're lacking is exposure to other cultures and other people?
That and more women. Okay. I love ladies. Julie Kitchen.
If you could go to one country that you think that has the most beautiful women, where would it be?
We're going to Holland, bro. That's happening. We're going to Holland. I'm going to the red light district, and I'm going to prostitute myself.
How much do you think you get?
Probably nothing. I'll do it for free. So, bro, I love you, man. I'm glad we're getting this rolling, and I know we got some big names coming up. We're going to drop it as the week goes on.
Anybody coming out that maybe we could talk about or no?
You know, we keep hinting at Julie Kitchen. We've been talking to her, so that's coming up.
That was definitely, like, one of our best podcasts.
Yeah, so we're going to have a blast with that. You know, of course, we got to get Stephanie back on it from Stupid Easy Paleo.
She's awesome. She has her own podcast. Maybe she'll invite us. Probably not, but...
Yeah, probably not.
She's like, you motherfuckers curse too much and talk about dick jokes all day.
Yeah, so probably not, but we won't be on hers, but she'll be on ours.
For sure.
And I say we get Mike Mahler back on.
We could do that.
Yeah.
We need to get Joe Viz on the podcast.
We'll probably get Joe Viz. And if I was to say one more, I regret to say it, but we got to get my father on.
Holy shit.
We got to get him on so everybody knows why I'm scarred for the rest of my life.
What is one of your dad's favorite quotes?
Strong, youthful youth. Big, strong, vibrant youth.
On that note...
We're out. Peace out, guys.